It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And for August, when supposedly things are supposed to quiet down a little bit, we have a lot of news this week. So we will get right to it. And we will start with Jay Bruce, who last night made his way from New York to Cleveland. And I'm inclined to give him a little bump. You know, Bruce is really inconsistent, and I think he's one of those guys where you're always kind of worried that the bottom might fall out at any time. But he is going almost certainly to a better lineup and to a team that I think is going to play him. I mean, I don't think this opportunity is going to vanish. I don't think suddenly guys are going to come back and he's going to stop playing. So I don't think it changes Bruce much at all, but I think it gives me a little extra faith that he might produce pretty good numbers from here to the end. Do you change anything about how you look at Bruce right now?
I'm with you. I think just a small bump. I think he is what he is. I mean, he has been in his career an inconsistent hitter, so he's someone who could have a bad month, and we wouldn't be surprised. That being said, he's on pace for almost 40 home runs. So, I mean, he goes in every fantasy lineup, and I think this gives him a higher floor. The Indians lineup isn't going to get ugly down the stretch. I mean, they're competing. They have a lot of good players in that lineup. They're going to be somewhere between an average lineup and a really good lineup, somewhere that way down the stretch. The Mets lineup had the potential to be ugly at times down the stretch. We'll see. Maybe the Mets will be fine. They haven't traded away all their pieces. At the same time, it's a lineup that's a little thin. They've lost now a couple of key players with Bruce and Duda. Like, they're trending in that direction of that rebuild their lineup for next season. So I think this just raises his floor and makes him a really, like for a hit or miss kind of slugger, kind of an all or nothing guy, I think this makes him more secure down the stretch.
This may hasten the time frame of Dominic Smith. I'm not crazy about Smith in the short term. I look at a guy who has certainly hit but hasn't destroyed the PCL, and I, you know, for me to get excited about a first baseman who's been at the PCL, I really want to see a guy just obliterating that league. You know, something a little more like what Garrett Cooper was doing, actually. I know there's a total difference in prospect status. Cooper's an older guy. But, you know, Smith, he's hitting 330, and that's nice. But 16 home runs at Las Vegas for a first baseman does not get me excited. He doesn't really have particularly elite strike zone judgment. He doesn't strike out a lot, which is nice, but he also doesn't walk. An unkind assessment might be that this guy kind of looks like a James Loney starter kit, and I have heard that parallel. And it's not like Loney was a useless ball player, but he never had a lot of fantasy value. Should I be more excited about Smith's arrival than I am?
Not necessarily. I guess maybe just a tiny bit. Like, James Loney's harsh, but maybe just a tiny bit, but not tremendously. I mean, Las Vegas, I couldn't hit for average in Las Vegas, but a lot of good baseball players can. So I think, yeah, I think you have to take that with a grain of salt. And the Mets were going to trade Jay Bruce as soon as they got a respectable offer for him, no matter what the situation. I think the way they
or
were going this season. Yeah, exactly. And as far as Smith goes, I think it just, with the depth of power-hitting corner infielders across baseball, you'll want to pick him up in a 15-team league. You may want to pick him up in a 12-team league, and I think that's the cap. In 10-team league, they'll probably ignore him unless he gets off to a great start. So if you're stashing him now, I'd stash him maybe in a 15-team league just because, like quality players are really at a premium in that format. In a 12-team league, I wouldn't stash him yet.
Now let's switch to a corner prospect in the National League East who has just obliterated the competition at two levels in a row. Rhys Hoskins hit 38 home runs in the Eastern League last year. He hit 29 in 115 games in the International League this year. He has hit for decent average. He hit 281 last year, 284 this year. Got a pretty good control of the strike zone. He actually doesn't strike out a lot for a power prospect. And according to MLB.com's Todd Zielecki, he will be arriving tonight. He's been playing a little outfield in AAA in order to increase the opportunity for him. You know, from a long-term perspective, there are reasons that Smith is considered, in some cases, maybe a better prospect or has been considered a better prospect. He's apparently a pretty good first baseman. He hits for average. He's younger. But in the short term, I like Hoskins a lot more, and I'm pretty intrigued by this guy. I mean, I think he's of a type of a lot of hitters in fantasy baseball this year. You know, I don't think he's going to hit 280 in the majors. I do think he's going to hit home runs. I think he's going to play. So, you know, as a cheap power source, I like Hoskins. I think he's a guy you should be thinking about picking up. What's your read on him?
Yeah, I would pick him up in almost any league. I like the contact skills. Like, I like that this isn't an all or nothing power hitter. If you got a player coming up who doesn't, at least in the minors, didn't strike out a lot and has a lot of power, it makes sense for the Phillies to play him a lot down the stretch. I know they don't want to take Tommy Joseph out of first base, but Joseph can play four or five games a week. You know, Hoskins can get in there once or twice a week, and then Hoskins can play the rest of the week in the outfield where they can rotate around even when Aaron Altair comes back from the DL. So I think Hoskins plays five or six games a week the rest of the way. It's late in the season. My thought on this one, when I saw him called up, is, like, obviously you pick him up, you know, if you have someone on your team who's just not performing at all. But if you have a bigger name player who's not performing, an Eric Thames, a Todd Frazier, a Chris Davis, you know, those types of first base. So, Matthew, would you be willing, I mean, we've only got, about 7 weeks left in the season. Would you be willing to drop one of those kind of guys who are low average power hitters and maybe try to go for it all with Hoskins?
If I needed the jolt, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that if you are in that position where you need the help, I think that there is, look, I mean, Chris Davis at any time, it is entirely possible that Chris Davis hits 13 home runs from now to the end of the year. Nobody would be shocked if that happened. But, boy, he is just not producing. And that's a guy in particular, you know, he got dropped in our 10-team office league and didn't get picked up this week. I mean, that's kind of where he's at. So, you know, I definitely think some of those guys, you know, I think that the difference you point out, particularly with somebody like Davis, and I think that's an easy call. That one to me is a one-for-one is an easy call because, you know, Davis has a little more power potential for sure, but, you know, even if you're being kind to him, you're not going to expect him to hit more than about 240 from here on out. And I don't think Hoskins hits 280, but I do think that there's a pretty good chance he hits 260. As you note, you know, he puts the bat to the ball and he hits for power. So, yeah, I think that's a totally reasonable thought process if you're looking for a jolt, if you're looking to sort of catch some lightning in a bottle. Wilson Contreras got hurt. It did not look good. Is Alex Avila a good alternative?
I think he is. I mean, he's someone who, in limited playing time this season, has hit pretty well. So, and the catcher options on waivers obviously aren't that great. When I looked at what owners could do as a replacement, you know, do you want to pick up Tyler Flowers, Mike Zunino? You know, you kind of can't have it all with your replacement catcher, but Avila has hit pretty well. He'll join a lineup that's been really productive lately. I think it's an easy shift if Contreras goes on the DL and you go to Avila. Matthew, would you rather have Avila than some of them, like the all power Zunino or the kind of high batting average but no power?
I don't know. I'm still, look, I know it's August. I'm still a little suspicious. I'm just looking at a guy who has not done anything like this since 2011. And I just, you know, I mean, maybe he keeps it up. And look, if there's nothing else out there, he's better than you know, the sort of non-options. But in your shallower leagues where there are other guys out there, he would not be at the top of my list to go to. I mean, I do like the opportunity, but I remain a little skeptical.
I will say that Avila hasn't hit well in the second half. He did hit well in the first half. He hasn't played much in the second half and hasn't hit well. Maybe my thought process should be, if you own Contreras and he goes on the DL, maybe grab Avila for 3 or 4 days, 5 days,
yeah,
and just see how he does. You know he's going to play, so see how he does
right.
For a few days. And then you can always pivot back to those catchers who seemingly are always on waivers, the Flowers, the Zunino, Austin Hedges, the ones that are basically always on waivers in those one catcher leagues.
I think that, yeah, I definitely think that makes sense. I mean, he is going to play, and so if you're in a deeper league where you just need somebody who's going to play, and there are some of those cases, that's a guy who's going to play, and so there's value there. I think what I would say is I would not get my hopes up too high as far as what he might offer. And one of the weirder deals at the trade deadline, when the Rays had been gearing up, had been adding a lot of pieces, and in fact had been one of the most aggressive teams in adding pieces leading up to the deadline, they sent Tim Beckham to Baltimore. I guess they just wanted to make him go away. But Tim Beckham is 27, is a former number one overall pick, and has 827 big league plate appearances where he slugged 443. He's a pretty good player. You know, you take his stats and you throttle them back, just sort of do the quick math and say, okay, multiply by about 0.7, and you're talking 20 home runs, 68 RBIs, 7 steals, 60-some runs, 259 hitter. That's a fairly useful middle infielder. And, you know, one of the things you noted in your note to me is that he seems like the kind of guy that thrives in Baltimore. He's going to have the chance to play. I'm still a little perplexed as to why the Rays didn't want him. But he seems like a sneaky ad. He seems like a guy that is probably worth picking up if he's still sitting out there, if somebody hasn't already jumped on that opportunity in your league. If nothing else, the move from the change in ballparks is an enormous lift to a guy with a little bit of power.
Yeah, when I saw this trade, I just thought, oh, well, the Orioles get another player who hits this profile, fits this profile that Baltimore, like Buck Showalter seems to be really comfortable managing hitters who strike out often and don't walk very often and building his offense that way. That's the MO, you know, that's Adam Jones, that's Mark Trumbo, that's Jonathan Scope, and that's Tim Beckham. And to me, I could see him emerging, if he can hold a full-time role with the Orioles, I could see him emerging as kind of a 25-homer type player who drives in runs, has a respectable batting average, and even with all the power out there right now, a middle infielder who can hit 25 home runs still has plenty of value and can hit maybe 260, maybe even 270. So to me, he fits. And what he doesn't do, which is draw walks, the Orioles don't, over the last few years, seem to be too concerned about. And we've seen a lot of power hitters have a lot of success there. So I think he's a really interesting one, especially with the multi-position eligibility.
If he's a guy who is going to lose playing time in Baltimore, I suspect it will be because of defense, but before it's because of the shape of his offensive production. You know, they do value that. But yeah, he's an exciting guy, and it seems like a great fit. A couple of, while we're talking prospects, and in fact, while we were just a minute ago talking National League East prospects, a couple more of them. Ahmed Rosario and Ozzie Albies, two very hyped, very exciting middle infield prospects. Neither of them has exactly lit it up upon arrival. And, you know, I can't say that's entirely shocking. They're both very young. They are both guys that I think in the long term are really exciting, but, you know, maybe aren't quite ready to be fantasy assets just yet. I mean, if you look at Albies in particular, you know, he had 285 at AAA. He had 21 steals. But, you know, 9 homers, 330 on base. He's more a skills prospect than a performance prospect, more a tools prospect than a performance prospect, and more a sort of not quite there yet guy. I think people were hoping Rosario would be a little less that way. We're hoping he was a little more polished, a little more ready. But again, you know, that Las Vegas factor, I think you can't dismiss that. He was hitting 328 at Las Vegas, but, you know, that's not really the real world. That's an extreme hitting environment. So, you know, I like these guys. I'd say I like them both still in NL only because they're playing and because they are going to get you some stolen bases and because they should hit better than they have been. But, you know, I think that it's possible that some people were a little overly optimistic on them. How much do you like them just this year? Because I think that's the thing you have to remember when you're talking prospects, because we don't do a lot of Dynasty League talk here. You know, we don't do a whole lot of Keeper League talk here. So it's really a question of this year. And I think that maybe these guys are more long-term prospects than August, September of 2017 prospects, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm not giving up on Rosario as much as I am Albies. I'm not giving up on either one of them. But Albies, like Brandon Phillips is still on the Braves roster. There's a chance Albies, I think, maybe isn't ready, but like maybe he is. I wouldn't mind holding him for a few more days, but I could see that scenario more. Rosario, I think, is going to play the rest of the way. I know they still have Jose Reyes, Anders, Drubal Cabrera, but I think Rosario is going to play the rest of the way, and I think this could just be, you know, a little slow stretch to get things going, and the ball starts to drop soon. He is mostly kind of like a singles and doubles type hitter, so he's not really a power hitter, so we may just see the batting average slowly climb. And you grab him for steals. That's what most owners wanted with either of them, especially with Rosario. So I'm not dropping him yet if I have him. I'm going to give him at least one more week. Like, it has been a really short time frame, and I know fantasy owners are under a lot of pressure late in the season to get immediate production, but, you know, so many good players struggle in a week or 2 weeks. I think we have to give especially a top prospect like him, a few more days.
One other thing I would note, because I think this is something we would not have foreseen, but when we're talking about these two guys in particular, I think it is worth noting that the team's priorities right now, weirdly, are different and not in the way you would have expected back in April. You know, the Braves, I don't think the Braves at an organizational level have any illusions that they are a contending team. I don't think they see themselves in the mix for a playoff spot. But I do think it matters to them how they finish out. They're really trying to build something. They're trying to build something organizationally. They're trying to build something in their new ballpark. They're trying to build something among their fan base. And, you know, the Braves are going to play to try to win from here on out. And so I don't think they're going to have a quick hook with Albies. But if in 2 weeks he doesn't look like he's ready, I think we saw with Dansby Swanson, they're willing to send a guy down and say, look, you need to be ready before you're here. Whereas the Mets are pretty much up and admitting, look, we're looking at next year now. So I don't think anybody would have seen that dichotomy between those two clubs working in that direction at the beginning of the year, but that's kind of where they are, and I think that's worth remembering as we look at these guys. Yonder Alonso heads from Oakland to Seattle. Looks like a slightly better environment, certainly a better lineup, but you know, goes from one brutal place to hit to another. The thing to remember with Alonso is, to me, he is looking more and more like a guy who had a really hot couple of months than a guy who figured something out. I'm not crazy about him in either environment. I like him a little more in Seattle because of the lineup, but to me, it doesn't really change the assessment. He's a guy where if you've got a better option, either that you could find in trade or on the waiver wire, I say go ahead and do it even in the new environment. Do you see more reason to look for a bump than I do?
No, I don't. I wouldn't. How about this? I wouldn't pick up Alonso if he was on waivers in my league and I didn't have interest in him before the trade. Then I'm still not interested. The only way I see a bump in a 15-team league or an AL only, if you already owned Alonso, and obviously he's not going to waivers in those leagues. So you already owned him. Now you can be maybe just a little more optimistic. Maybe a few more chances to drive in runs will occur down the stretch. But this is someone who hit 10 homers in May and has hit 8 since the beginning of June. So we're back to Alonso being, you know, like a 3-homer-a-month type guy, which is actually better than he was for the rest of his career. But if he's just a 3-homer-a-month type guy, then, you know, he's not really a factor in 10 and 12 team leagues in the current hitting environment. So don't go out and pick him up. But if you have him, then maybe this gets you a few more RBIs down the stretch, which could be useful.
Are we at a point where you could drop Sal Perez, or do you need to be holding on to him for when he comes back?
Yeah, I thought long and hard about this one, and I would keep him if at all possible. I would keep him over Matt Kemp and some of the good outfielders, maybe that are, or Justin Bour, some of those good hitters that are on the DL at deeper positions. And it's more about the replacement level. And now with the Contreras point, we've already talked about what it looks like to have to grab a catcher off waivers. Like, I can live with Tyler Flowers for 3 or 4 weeks in to replace Perez. Like, I have to live with someone to replace him. But I would not want a catcher like that for the last 2 months of the season if I'm trying to win my league. So I would really try hard to keep Sal Perez because he was having a really nice season and hope that I could have him for all of September, maybe even the last little bit of August, but at least all of September. And I would be willing in that place to cut a starting pitcher or an outfielder or a first baseman or something, and because I know there are more options to play around with at that position. I think we already discussed that we wouldn't cut, for example, Lance McCullers, and I still wouldn't want to cut Lance McCullers, but I'd rather cut Lance McCullers and play around with starting pitcher options than say that Tyler Flowers or Mike Zunino is my catcher the rest of the way. Does that make sense?
I think it makes sense. You know, my only worry is that's one of those tricky injuries. You know, it's not one that you expect guys to have a hard time coming back from, in that, you know, I think once it's healthy, you're fine, but they can be not as healthy as you think, and it can be a little trickier than some injuries. So I would definitely kind of be aware of that, and sort of wonder about that when it comes to time frame.
With a setback, then I would, if I saw one setback in the timetable pushed to 6 weeks or something, then I'm out. But as long as they keep talking late August, then I'm interested.
Yep. We just now were talking about an all-or-nothing young left-handed hitter who used to be in the Rangers organization. Let's talk about an all-or-nothing left-handed hitter who is in the Rangers organization, and that is Joey Gallo. He's 32 home runs, and we always knew he had that insane pure power, but it hadn't come together in production until this year, and frankly, until relatively recently. He's been on a tear lately, and has emerged as I would say a cut above the sort of whatever we call the Logan Morrison tier of guys who have found power this year, in part because we always expected it, but in part because he's doing more. He's having a ridiculous year. He's also hitting .212. How do you kind of balance that? Is that a guy – does that present a really good trade option, both sending out and bringing in? Given that at this point in the year we're really looking at categories as much as overall production.
For sure. I mean, in every league there's a team that could really use Joey Gallo. There's a team that's either, way out in front in batting average and says, I can hold on to Gallo. It won't affect me at all. You know, I have Posey and Justin Turner on my team or something like that. Or there's a team that's so hopelessly behind, or maybe not even ahead or behind, but just in a gap right now where they're not close to anyone in batting average who says, I need that power and I'll take it. So either the team that has Gallo should make sure he's in the active lineup, no questions asked, or if Gallo's not fitting what they need, they should be shopping him because he could bring back a really good return. And he is hitting for average in the second half. Like, he's hitting .279 in the second half. Now, that being said, I'm not considering Gallo to be a high average hitter. He's hitting so many home runs, in the second half that's really boosting. He has 11 homers and 68 at bats. Well, that's really going to help his average here in the second half. I wonder if Gallo could emerge as, I don't want to put him this high on a pedestal yet, but a little bit Ryan Howard-like as a left-handed hitter who has so much power that when things are going well, he could maybe, when he gets to his prime, give you a respectable batting average. And then when things are going poorly, which we saw with Howard at times, it like really bottoms out to mediocre power and a really low average, or maybe even also a little Chris Davis like. I don't know what you think of those two comps, but
Davis is the guy who makes a little more sense to me, though it may just be the organization. I may be sort of seeing parallels that aren't baseball parallels, but one of the differences is that as best Howard had such a great command of the strike zone. Howard was such a guy, so willing to walk, and Davis has done that some, but not necessarily at that same kind of way, and I don't see Gallo as being a guy who is going to draw 100 walks in a season. So that's to me is part of what allows one of those kind of guys to have those good batting average years, is if you lay off the stuff that you're going to roll over. If you don't swing at that pitch, then you don't make an out. And so that, to me, is part of how guys like that succeed to some extent in batting average. So I think that the Davis parallel might be a little better as far as the kind of hitter he is. But I see what you're talking about.
And we've always said with Davis, you ride the ups and downs, and the numbers will be there at the end of the year. And that's what Gallo may be emerging as. You live with the zero homer, 100 batting average week, because you also get the three homer, 9 RBI type week, and you just hope at the end of the year there's 40 home runs and 90 or 100 RBI.
That's the key to me, is you have to be honest with yourself about what you've got in this player. Josh Donaldson, torrid over the last week or two, still overall quiet since the break, quiet overall this year by what we expect of him. I see him, to me, as much as a find an opportunity to sell while you can get it, still get something, as a buy-in before people notice how hot he is. But I guess that means that he's a guy who should be getting talked about in trades one way or the other, correct?
Yeah, for sure. I think he fits, to me, he fits the profile of if you're sitting in fourth or fifth place in your league and you want to take a shot on someone, you know, who definitely has shown in recent years that he has high-end potential, then you could pick up Donaldson at a discount. I mean, he's still on the season. He's hitting .253 with 15 home runs. So the price for Donaldson on the trade market may not be really high. You know, you pick him up and you hope that the home runs he's been hitting of late continue, and, you know, and you get a real stud down the stretch. Even though he's really consistent across the past 2 years, I think he is a little boom or bust for the stretch, where he's probably either going to revert back to what he was for the first 3.5 months, and we'll say, oh, remember when he just had that little power blip in early August, or we'll say, oh, he really got back on track for the last couple of months of the season. I think it's a worthy gamble if you're looking at your team and thinking, I'm probably not a league champion either way unless I do something splashy, and the trade deadline in a lot of leagues is in the next few days.
Yeah, I think the point is, he is a guy who, because there are two really different ways to look at him, should definitely be coming up in trade talks, you know, because there is almost certainly somebody who values him differently than you do. We move to starting pitchers. Hyunjin Ryu, the guy that people, I think, kind of liked as a sleeper at the beginning of the year, didn't quite look like people were hoping, but has been pretty good lately. Colin McHugh also has been pretty good while pitching for a good team. Are these guys that people are sleeping on?
I think a little bit. I think I could summarize it by saying if anyone's starting for the Dodgers or the Astros who has been pitching reasonably well of late, I'll put them in my lineup. The way pitching's going this year and how hard it is to find reliable starters, the Astros are the highest scoring team in baseball, so the run support should be there. The Dodgers are the winningest team in baseball and have a good offense and one of the best bullpens, so the overall support should be there. I just like my chances on any given night with one of their starters. I would not use one of their starters if he was pitching really poorly, but both of those, Ryu and McHugh, have both pitched well enough lately that I think they should be active in all leagues, just on the strength of if they just go out and give you 6 innings, 3 runs, they have a decent chance of winning the game.
A couple of young starting pitchers getting some opportunities. Brandon Woodruff, you know, not necessarily a super highly regarded guy, you know, kind of a borderline top 100 prospect, was pitching okay at Colorado Springs, but, you know, again, context with Colorado Springs. Has been pretty good in a couple of starts for the Brewers, not missing a lot of bats, but getting opportunities for a good team. You know, as a kind of interesting contrast, Ronaldo Lopez, much higher rated prospect, a guy who misses bats, but looks like he's going to get an opportunity for a bad team. I am not crazy about either of these guys. I've always been a little less convinced on Lopez than other people. I just haven't really seen the performance match the tools, and so I've always been a little cool on him relative to other people, but, you know, in your deeper leagues, if you're looking for guys who might help, these are guys who might help. Who do you like more?
I like Woodruff more. I have the same feeling as you on Lopez. I just see a real uphill climb for him for the rest of the season, where he's in the American League, his home park doesn't help him, and his bullpen is unlikely to help him, and his lineup doesn't look so great as far as run support goes. And I see that as just an uphill climb. That being said, I will say I've seen some people who I really respect in this industry, you know, tweet out that they're optimistic on him. So maybe you and I are kind of the low guys on Lopez for the rest of the season, but that's how I see him. Woodruff, I see, I agree with you on the Colorado Springs take that doesn't show us maybe what he's capable of. And with the Brewers in contention, respectable bullpen, lineup that hasn't been very good in the second half, but should probably be better than the White Sox the rest of the way. He's in the National League. If I'm in a 15-team league, I'll take a chance on Woodruff. I think he's streaming in anything more shallow than that, where you just use him for one good matchup and then drop him back to waivers. Lopez, I'm out until I see I see some quality starts from him.
One thing we talk about a lot here is finding ace value without paying an ace price. Some guys who might fit that description. I'm fully in right now on Luis Severino, and I am fully in on James Paxton. To me, these are guys who have both the performance and the tools. You know, Paxton flirted with this last year, and the question was, could he stay healthy enough to do it consistently? Severino is a guy who has, we've always known, had the ability. It was weird last year that he didn't show it. It was just looked like kind of growing pains. I'm not nearly as high on Godley, but that's only because I like the other two guys so much. From here to end of year, I think I would rate them Paxton, Severino, Godley, with a way bigger difference between 2 and 3 than between 1 and 2. How would you rate these three guys as potentially finding ace value without paying an ace price?
Yeah, I have them in the same order. I think of Paxton and Severino because of the strikeout rate more as aces and Godley more as a number two. I do think Godley's a sneaky trade target, though, for people who are maybe looking a little more for a number two than an ace. Maybe the values, the price is even a little lower on him. As a little preview, we have an article coming out on our site, I think over the weekend, that's called 50 for 50, and it's the top 50 fantasy players for the final 50 days of the regular season, and Paxton and Severino are both in it. So that's top 50 fantasy assets for out of all positions is pretty high stature. Now, I will have concerns for a while about Paxton and his ability to stay healthy for a full season. I mean, he already spent time on the DL with a forearm injury this year, an elbow injury last year. Those are concerning types of injuries for long-term value. But things totally swing when we're into August. You don't need James Paxton to stay healthy for 30 starts. You need him to stay healthy for 10, and that's a lot less risky. So for owners who need to make that big splash in pitching or else they're not going to win their league and can't afford to trade Jose Altuve for Chris Sale, you know, you could probably go down one or two rungs on the player ladder, on the hitter ladder, and still come away with Paxton. I think that's really a nice, could be a nice value. He could be just as good as almost any pitcher down the stretch.
Yeah, to me, that's the thing, is that the upside on him is so high, and the context is so friendly. It's a good place to pitch. They're scoring some runs. They will probably protect leads for him. I really like that. You know, the Severino, I probably like the pitcher a little bit more, but it is a little bit of a tougher place to pitch. You are more likely to run into that. You know, I just made a couple of mistakes, and suddenly I had allowed 6 runs in 4 2/3. And as good as the Yankees' bullpen is, it just seems like they're having a hard time making that all work. I still like both of those guys a lot, and I think we're talking about really fine differences. We will move on to closers in just a moment, but before we do, I want to take a minute to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, focusing on the lighter side of baseball. If you've hung around with us this far, we think you might like the Cut Forecast, too. It'll make you laugh, and you might learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode shed some light on the person behind MLB's many official social media accounts and left no stone unturned in Astros mascot Orbit's bitter feud with Rays starter Chris Archer. That sounds like something you'd be into. Search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. And while we're talking about the lighter side, let's talk about some closer carousels. And you mentioned that we leave with one that really just kind of, as you know, it was done really quietly. Nobody really thought Jim Johnson was in any trouble, and suddenly Aroldis Vizcaíno was closing for the Braves. Hard for me to think Vizcaíno hasn't been picked up anywhere, but if he's sitting there, look, that's a guy who's almost certainly the best pitcher in that bullpen all along. To me, the question is not, is he a pickup, but how highly do you rate him? I think he's a top half closer, don't you?
I think he's right around that point. And so he's still available in more than half of Yahoo leagues. And that's why I put quietly, like, in our notes for today, I think this one flew under the radar as much as any closer ascension I think I've ever seen, where, like you said, Johnson was going along and then he blew a couple saves, had a couple rough outings, and then they didn't really make like a big announcement. They just kind of started using Vizcaíno in safe situations, and it all happened right in late July when you, me, and everyone else who plays fantasy baseball was really focused in on all the rumors about who would be traded and who would be the next closers, and we're racing out to get Brad Ziegler and Shane Green and Brad Hand, and very quietly, Vizcaíno became the closer, and just nobody really talked about it or picked him up, and he's owned in fewer leagues than almost any closer, and I think we both agree he's at least a mid-tier closer for the rest of the season. So this is a great person for owners to go out and look at. He could be as successful down the stretch as any of those closers who emerged through the deadline deal.
I also think he is at least as safe as any of those guys. The Braves like him a lot, and I think that it was as much sort of deferring to the veteran Johnson who they'd signed as it was to not wanting Vizcaino to be the guy. They like him a lot. They're gonna stick with him. How much do you like, again, we're going to sort of play a little bit of a lightning round with some of these guys, Matt Belisle, you buying it all? You like it all? You believe it?
Oh, I want to say something nice about Matt Belisle, but I don't really believe it, except to say that he probably is their closer for right now. I kind of thought it would be Taylor Rogers. It looks like it's probably Belisle. I don't really believe it. In a 15-team league, I would grab him, but with all the closer options that have come up in recent weeks, like if you really needed a closer and you didn't get one or two of the players we talked about while we were talking about Vizcaino, I guess if you're in a league that deep, then I'll try Belisle. Like Matthew, do you think Belisle is the Twins closer on September 1st?
Sure, why not? I mean, honestly, like I kid, but you know, the Twins have sort of signaled that they understand that this is probably not happening for them this year. So I don't know that they're going to be desperate to sort of slide guys in and out of that role. He'll have to be awful for him not to be the guy, I think, because I don't think it's going to be like they're going to say, you know, well, you blew a couple, we're going to go with the next guy because we're in a race here. So I think they'll probably be patient. I don't think he'll be terrible, so I could see that.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't really believe in Fernando Rodney. Here we are. He's still the closer. We didn't really believe in Bud Norris. Now, that started to go off the rails. But at the same time, owners for a while, I think you could treat him the same way you treated Norris. If you're in a deep league, pick him up, put him in your lineup. As long as he's getting saves and not hurting your ratios too badly, leave him in. And at the first sign of blow up, then get him to your bench quickly.
Another of those kind of in the same category, Blake Treinen. Is he the guy? Do you buy it? Do you like him if he is the guy?
I think he is the guy. I think that they've maybe moved on from Santiago Casilla, and I think Treinen is the guy. I know that they said that they would kind of be willing to use either one of them in a safe situation, but it seems to be Treinen that's the guy. Now, I think it's way too soon for owners to have lost that bad taste of their mouth from what happened in Washington back in April. At the same time, closing for the A's down the stretch this year is probably the least pressure that a closer can have. You know, they're way out of it. Not full stadiums at home. You know, I mean, if he can pitch in the ninth inning, this is his chance to show it. And I would pick him up over Belisle, but behind everyone else pretty much who's a closer right now. Do you like him more than you like Belisle?
I guess. To me, they're kind of in the same class because I don't have a whole lot of faith in either the pitcher or the opportunity in either one, but I think the difference is I'm probably like Treinen the pitcher a little bit more, but the presence of Casilla makes me a little less confident in his safety in the role, so I'm not crazy about either of them. And one last one, because we can't go an entire show without talking about either the Rangers or the Nationals bullpen, Alex Claudio, are we finally confident that the Rangers have their closer for the remaining 7 weeks of the season?
Nope, not really. But I think I would pick up. But I would pick up Claudio. He's pitched well this season. I thought with him being a lefty that they would go with one of the righties in that bullpen. But Keone Kella is back on the DL. That seems like it's just not going to work out. I think Kella had possibilities, but it's not going to work out. And when I look at Claudio, he has a 2.63 career ERA. So I think he can do it at least well enough. I like him more than Treinen, and I like him more than Belisle. I think all three of those situations, just off the top of my head, are in the bottom five or six for fantasy closers out of the 30 teams. But I will put Claudio probably more around 25th than 30th. Are you with me with him ahead of Treinen and Belisle?
Yes. Yeah, that I would say. I do like him more than those guys, because I like the pitcher a little more.
Yeah, but less than Vizcaino, Shane Green, Brad Ziegler, yes. All of those ones who came from the deadline?
Yeah, the only guy I would put sort of down in this tier that we're talking about right now is Ziegler. I probably like him a little more than – I do like him more than Treinen and Belisle, but I don't like him as much as Claudio or Vizcaino.
Yeah, I might have Ziegler ahead of Claudio, but I agree with you. I have him behind Vizcaino. I have him behind Shane Green. But I do have him ahead of those other ones, especially as long as Kyle Barraclough is on the DL.
Yes. And finally, we move to the two start pitchers, and it's a decent list. Ty Block at Miami and home for Philadelphia. Kevin Gausman, why do you do this to me? At Seattle and home for the Angels. Trevor Bauer at Boston and at Kansas City. Colin McHugh at Arizona and home for Oakland. Trevor Cahill at Oakland and home for Cleveland. Adam Conley, home for the Giants and at the Mets. Jared Eichhoff at San Diego and at the Giants. I think I like Eichhoff the best because I like the pitcher pretty well, and I love the matchups. Bauer has been absolutely torrid lately, but those are a stiff pair of places to pitch. That's a tough set of matchups. I like Block. I like those matchups. I like the pitcher pretty well. I like McHugh, but at Arizona is a kind of a tough assignment. But it's a pretty good list, and I'm just not going to touch Gausman. I just can't. I'm just – I have
one runner less in four of his last five starts. So
I know. If I go pick him up, then he's going to blow up again. So I'm I'm not going to jinx poor Kevin Gausman by getting excited one more time.
Yeah, just leave him on his own. Don't own him. Let him just do his thing for the rest of the season. Get his life back on track before you try owning him again. I love that. This is one of my favorite lists this season. I think Bauer, I would use Bauer in a lot of leagues. As you said, they're tough matchups, but especially if you're looking boom or bust. If you're protecting ratios, then I wouldn't use them in Boston and in Kansas City. But this is someone who could get you, could actually get you 15 strikeouts next week. So I love Block as just really safe. He's probably going to get you 7 or 8 strikeouts in the two starts, but the matchups are great. Conley, the matchups are great. Eichhoff, the matchups are great. McHugh, as I said, I will use Houston pitchers. The at Arizona is tough, but the home to Oakland's nice. I'll use a Houston pitcher who's pitching fairly well. I like Cahill, the pitcher, and the at Oakland's fine, and the home to Cleveland I think is okay too. Gausman, I'd use Gausman in all seriousness. I'd use him in a 15-team league. In a 12-team league, I think I like the other ones better, that there's probably someone else. I'd probably just grab Block or Conley off waivers and use them instead, but the matchups aren't bad at Seattle and home to the Angels. They're not bad. He is my last one on the list, though.
All right, that's the Fantasy 411 for this week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.